Georgia Harmer and Take It On from her new album, Eye of the Storm.
This is Bird Note. Swans like this Hooper swan are impressive animals. They're among the largest flying birds around today. But 11.5 million years ago, two extinct species from Japan took an even more epic direction. Like today's swans, Anica cygna hajime and Anica cygna yoshiensis were quite large. But unlike their modern relatives, these birds live most of their lives out at sea, and their fossils reveal remarkable adaptations to this unusual lifestyle. They had wide, spatula-shaped beaks, somewhat like modern shoveler ducks. The dense bones of their wide hips let them remain stable on choppy waters while filtering plankton from the sea surface with their oversized heads. Their wings weren't built for flight, but had the musculature and range of motion to suggest they weren't useless. In combination with the flexible tail, they could form a cradle for carrying chicks on their back, which some swans still do now with their young. The remarkable anatomy of Anica cygna reveals a creature uniquely adapted to thrive in an environment quite unlike what you'd expect for a swan. To quote the scientists who named it in a 2022 study, in a sense, it is the ultimate bird that ever existed. For Bird Note, I'm Ade Ben Salahuddin.
Curious, something cultural, something unserious, sometimes serious, something mundane, something everyday, though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday, you heard that right, Monday, from 3 to 4 p.m., your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.
Time now for Gardening with Embark, and joining me in the studio here is Pablo Vimas, our gardens expert from Embark Sustainability.
Hello, morning.
Good morning. It's pretty wet out there.
Yes.
And that causes problems in the garden.
Correct.
Especially at this time of year.
Yeah.
It is week
43, and we're just 1 month after the autumn or fall has started.
Yeah.
Usually the fall here in British Columbia, Vancouver, is very wet, quite a lot of rainfall. And that is just getting some problems in the garden, producing some problems in the garden that have kept me overnight thinking, how am I going to solve it?
Right. So what are those problems?
So those problems is, as I've been sharing with you, is that over the summer we installed seven watering garden beds.
Yeah.
And there is no free drainage, so all the water accumulates in the 6 inches at the bottom of the garden bed.
And that's part of the design.
Correct.
Most of the year, or at least throughout most of the growing season, that's a big benefit.
Yes, it's a big benefit because we have a reservoir of water. It doesn't drain, so over the summer we don't have to water quite often because we know that there is water in there.
Yeah.
On top of that, we also have installed a plastic reservoir around 5 gallons of water inside the garden bed itself. Mm-hmm. So we have 6 inches and as well a reservoir of water.
Yep.
But now it's raining so much and the water, although it's raining, but the soil is saturated. So
right.
I visited the garden yesterday and I saw a thin layer of, how would I say, a creamy soil. Very, very thin layer of clay, very thin particles in there.
Right.
Like, oh, that's not normal. Usually, you don't see that in regular soil.
So is that the water kind of rising to the top?
Correct. Is yeah. The water is rising up, and so all the soil is saturated in the garden bed. So now, what to do? So the thing is that what I'm going to do is to pump out all the water that I have in my 5 gallons reservoir.
Right.
And hopefully that... when winter arrives, that water won't freeze and break my container, my self-watering container. And then let's see if the only drainage hole that we have in the garden bed is enough to drain all the water. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we might need to create a second.
Right, because we do get sometimes a lot of rain, and I guess that can sort of overwhelm the plumbing.
Indeed. But I have to be as well careful for the next season, because at the moment, the garden beds have no hoop houses, so mm-hmm. they are just open. They are collecting all the rain.
Yeah.
So in the next year, we will be building hoop houses, so mm-hmm. there won't be much water getting into the soil.
Right.
So it's just like, okay, for this winter, I have to see how I can manage this excess of water.
Right.
Yeah. If you are gardening, I know that other elementary schools across Burnaby, they have these metal troughs. And those metal troughs are, again, could be self-watering. And if you have one of those, you those metal troughs have a plug at the one of the sides
yeah.
or the trough. So you just need to unplug it, let the water drain, mm-hmm. and close it back. So, or if you don't have that, we just make sure that is unplugged and the water will just freely drain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at the moment, there are several self-watering garden beds out there, several designs, mm-hmm. double plastic ones with double wall, and all of them suffer the same problem.
Right.
Yes, all of them is the water accumulates, the water table rises, there is not enough drainage, and yeah, that garden bed becomes, if it doesn't freeze, it becomes just a puddle of mud, right. a container full of mud, yeah.
I imagine a wood container might sort of drain a little better, but I also think the weight of all that saturated soil would put a lot of strain on a wood garden box as well.
Yes, yeah, or in a good garden box, in any garden, in any structure.
Yeah.
Because once this water freezes, just the water expands. If it doesn't have room, it will just break through.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's one of the things that I have to deal with in the coming days, to pump the water. We have 20 garden beds, 5 gallons each.
Yeah.
Okay, it's lots of water that yeah. we have to deal. The other thing is, across campus, we've been noticing that all the irrigation lines are being flushed.
Mm-hmm.
So that as well, we use as a hint, like, it's time to bring our garden hoses inside.
Right.
We use very, very long hoses, around 100 feet long, and all of them are rubber. So mm-hmm. we thought, like, we cannot spend replacing hoses yearly, so yeah. we invested quite a bit for having rubber hoses. So what we do is just close the tap from the wall and extend the gardening hose as long as we can, and then lift the hose and drain the water.
Walk all the way down along the length yeah. to get that water out.
Correct. And then roll it up and bring the hose indoors. So
right.
now in our office, we have all the hoses, the hose carts, they are staying for the winter. So that's, again, if you have your own garden there, it's time to start cleaning your hoses. And if you have plastic hoses mm-hmm. or PVC hoses, just make sure that they are in a warm environment, because once the temperature drops outside, they tend to crack.
Right.
Or they become rigid, and when you try to undo it over the spring or summer, they just will crack. And yeah, so.
And if you take these steps, you're going to thank yourself in the spring when you find you're not going to come out to find you need to replace a bunch of hoses that
correct
that froze and burst or bulged and
yeah so that is, we do all this work now, so for the spring when we have to bring the gardening hoses, we are certainly that they're all in one piece and we don't have to replace. At the moment, there are so many varieties of hoses out there, the ones that shrink by themselves, or expandable garden hoses, that's
yeah.
another thing. They still puncture.
Yeah.
They still I have a couple of them, and I didn't realize, we used to use rubber hoses, so I just flicked my hose and ended up on the gooseberries. And the gooseberry has big thorns.
Yeah.
So the wall hose was puncture, and yeah. there it goes. So, yeah, it's other considerations that we had taken account when you are dealing with these expandable hoses. They are lovely. They expand 150 yeah. Feet, but and the compressor is very short, but mm-hmm. you have to be very careful how you handle. They are not like a
regular. They're not durable.
And then you cannot mend them, unfortunately. It's one is a puncture in there, it is. You cannot mend it.
Yeah, well, water is your friend throughout most of the year, but I guess you know, it's like anything. Too much of a good thing is something you need to watch out for.
Yes, yes. At the moment, so yeah, too much rain, and I think this weekend is going to be very, very wet. The forecast is saying we have an atmospheric river coming, and let's see how it goes. But yeah, it's another experience. Gardening is constantly moving, it's changing, never is static. Yeah. Every year is a different thing. And yeah, that's a wonderful gardening. You don't stop learning and you don't stop doing things. You keep doing things even over the winter.
And I guess, you know, this also, you know, we've talked in the last couple of weeks a bit about hoop houses and stuff and how valuable they are in managing these water issues.
Correct, yes. Yeah, so for instance, we have excessive water. The soil, the fields cannot handle that. Mm-hmm. So even the fields will be waterlogged, puddles are here and there. And that's also when we talk, I think, a few weeks back, when it rains, visit your garden. Yeah. Go out and see where the water is pooling. Because later you will need to manage that water, excess water. You don't want that. If you have a raised bed, you don't want any water around your raised bed. You want that they just drain freely down.
Right.
Yeah. And particularly when you have wooden garden beds, because the wood tends to rot, and then you will have in a few years having to repair the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, washing up for water. Thanks so much, Pablo. Pablo Vimas is our gardening expert from Embark Sustainability, and he's here every week, well, at least for a couple more weeks until really the season ends.
Yes.
And then we'll be taking a break.
Mm-hmm.
But tell us about how people can find out more about Embark.
So Embark Sustainability is a nonprofit organization managed by students. We are half of our resources, and we are based in the student union in the first floor. You can see our work in our website, EmbarkSustainability.org, or through our social channels at Embark Sustainability.
Excellent. Thanks for being here, Pablo. Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability. We'll see you again next week.
See you next week.
And we'll be doing Gardening with Embark for a couple more weeks. But really, we're kind of at the end of the gardening season, so we'll be taking a break with a couple special episodes and then back in March. So tune in next week and the week after, and you can catch our final 2025 episodes or interviews or talks or sessions of Gardening with Embark. But we'll be back for the 2026 season. So I hope you've enjoyed the season so far this year and learned a lot about what you can do in your garden. All right, we're going to talk now about stuff.
About the advertisements, Doug Ford's Ontario government. I think they were in the United States too, weren't they?
They were in the United States. So, you know, starting last week, the government of Ontario started running ads on major TV networks in the States with the goal of influencing, public opinion about the whole trade war thing that's been happening. The ad featured clips from a speech given by Republican.
A radio address. But they did have a visual disc. They just videotaped it too.
Yeah. Yeah. A radio address that was also videotaped that was given by Ronald Reagan, who was president at the time in 1987, about tariffs and his position on tariffs. And Donald Trump did not like it at all, even though he's never mentioned in the ad.
Anyway, we are now, after I say a few words about this, we're going to play the entire five-minute clip, the five-minute piece, actually. It's not going to be a clip. It's going to be the whole thing. What happened was that tariffs in 1987 were placed on Japan, and the reason being, because the United States accused Japan of failing to abide by a 1986 agreement and allowing for the dumping of semiconductor chips into the markets, which harmed American producers' ability to compete. Now, what was done was that 100% tariffs on Japanese laptop computers, power tools, and TV sets, amongst other items. Now, what was not mentioned is VCRs, because I think during the 80s the only people were, the Japanese were only people making VCRs.
Yeah.
And that was, we're dating.
And for people who aren't old enough, that's a video cassette recorder. Allowed you to play videos on your
TV.
It
was once the future.
It was pretty amazing when it first happened.
Me and my brother got ours in 1984. And I got something here. The crazy fight in France over domestic VCR market in 1982, which I just saw this morning. Anyway, I don't know if that was part of, they say, among other things. But so be it. That's a bit of a gap in my knowledge.
Yeah. So part of the setup here is, of course, that Ronald Reagan and the Republicans, and really even at this time, the Democratic Party, and broadly across the Western world, the idea of free speech, not 100% free speech, where there's nothing about tariffs, but the idea that as much as possible, tariffs should be reduced or eliminated to facilitate and open up trade was fast becoming the solid consensus of governments throughout the Western world. And the U.S. and the Reagan administration were one of the real leaders of that movement, which was, you know, I mean, still a relatively new idea, but in the time between when this speech was made in the 80s and up until Trump came along, that was the consensus for international trade policy throughout most of the world, and particularly among the business community, who are very, very strongly oriented towards free trade. Often, you know, there were elements of opposition, because I think, you know, various elements of civil society had real issues about how that was always implemented and how it often had a tendency to prioritize business interests over everything else. But nevertheless, it's kind of seemed like the discussion up until very recently was over. And in this speech, which Donald Trump flipped out about in the ads from put out by Ontario, Ronald Reagan lays out his argument, which was the Republican position, the business position, and pretty much the consensus position for the last 35 years. Anyway, let's let this...
Just maybe one last thing is that there's something called the Ronald Reagan Institute
Foundation.
Okay, we get the... They're saying they want to sue. Now, there's twofold on this. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Carter said that all presidential presentations are in the public domain. That's what he said. So this is in the public domain around the world. And also, they're not really saying in what context they're sort of against this being said at this mm-hmm. time. So let's just play it now.
And I think one of the reasons it's interesting to listen to the whole thing is, of course, the immediate response directly from Donald Trump, but then from other Republicans from the administration, was that this was fake. Some said it was, I think Donald Trump tried to claim it was AI, you know, that the Canadians were cheating in the messaging here because that the message was distorted. There's a whole lot of stuff that they were trying to spin out there to try and create the impression that this is not, these were not Donald or Ronald Reagan's view. So let's listen to the whole thing, and then we'll be back to talk about it afterwards.
My fellow Americans, Prime Minister Nakasone of Japan will be visiting me here at the White House next week. It's an important visit because while I expect to take up our relations with our good friend Japan, which overall remain excellent, recent disagreements between our two countries on the issue of trade will also be high on our agenda. As perhaps you've heard, last week I placed new duties on some Japanese products in response to Japan's inability to enforce their trade agreement with us on electronic devices called semiconductors. Now, imposing such tariffs or trade barriers and restrictions of any kind are steps that I am loath to take, and in a moment I'll mention the sound economic reasons for this, that over the long run such trade barriers hurt every American worker and consumer. But the Japanese semiconductors were a special case. We had clear evidence that Japanese companies were engaging in unfair trade practices that violated an agreement between Japan and the United States. We expect our trading partners to live up to their agreements. As I've often said, our commitment to free trade is also a commitment to fair trade. But you know, in imposing these tariffs, we were just trying to deal with a particular problem, not begin a trade war. So next week, I'll be giving Prime Minister Nakasone this same message. We want to continue to work cooperatively on trade problems and want very much to lift these trade restrictions as soon as evidence permits. We want to do this because we feel both Japan and the United States have an obligation to promote the prosperity and economic development that only free trade can bring. Now, that message of free trade is one I conveyed to Canada's leaders a few weeks ago, and it was warmly received there. Indeed, throughout the world, there's a growing realization that the way to prosperity for all nations is rejecting protectionist legislation and promoting fair and free competition. Now, there are sound historical reasons for this. For those of us who lived through the Great Depression, the memory of the suffering it caused is deep and searing. And today, many economic analysts and historians argue that high tariff legislation passed back in that period, called the Smoot-Hawley Tariff, greatly deepened the Depression and prevented economic recovery. You see, at first, when someone says, let's impose tariffs on foreign imports, it looks like they're doing the patriotic thing by protecting American products and jobs. And sometimes for a short while it works, but only for a short time. What eventually occurs is, first, homegrown industries start relying on government protection in the form of high tariffs. They stop competing and stop making the innovative management and technological changes they need to succeed in world markets. And then, while all this is going on, something even worse occurs. High tariffs inevitably lead to retaliation by foreign countries and the triggering of fierce trade wars. The result is more and more tariffs, higher and higher trade barriers, and less competition. So soon, because of the prices made artificially high by tariffs that subsidize inefficiency and poor management, people stop buying. Then the worst happens. Markets shrink and collapse, businesses and industries shut down, and millions of people lose their jobs. The memory of all this occurring back in the 30s made me determined when I came to Washington to spare the American people the protectionist legislation that destroys prosperity. Now, it hasn't always been easy. There are those in the Congress, just as there were back in the 30s, who want to go for the quick political advantage, who risk America's prosperity for the sake of a short-term appeal to some special interest group, who forget that more than 5 million American jobs are directly tied to the foreign export business and additional millions are tied to imports. Well, I've never forgotten those jobs, and on trade issues, by and large, we've done well. In certain select cases, like the Japanese semiconductors, we've taken steps to stop unfair practices against American products, but we've still maintained our basic long-term commitment to free trade and economic growth. So, with my meeting with Prime Minister Nakasone and the Venice Economic Summit coming up, it's terribly important not to restrict a president's options in such trade dealings with foreign governments. Unfortunately, some in the Congress are trying to do exactly that. I'll keep you informed on this dangerous legislation because it's just another form of protectionism, and I may need your help to stop it. Remember, America's jobs and growth are at stake. Until next week, thanks for listening, and God bless you.
All right, well, that's the entire radio address from Ronald Reagan given in 1987, and it's the speech from which the Ontario tariff ads were lifted from.
And what's interesting is that when you hear the whole thing, it's even more damning. Against, I mean, and they could say, well, they put Japanese tariffs. Well, he tells why. He talks about how we had a good thing with Canada and so on. Now, what exists...
And he also talks about how his goal will be to talk to the Japanese, yes, Prime Minister to resolve the issue so the tariffs can be removed.
Now, there's something called the Ronald Reagan Institute and Foundation. This institute is also in charge of the library, you know, because they always have a library, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In fact, Barack Obama has an abomination being created in Chicago, supposedly. It's not open yet. Anyways, but that's just it's almost like this. It is the George Orwellian concept, like you deal, but you're always contradicting yourself. There's Big Brother, be it Ronald Reagan or Donald Trump, and all everything. So they're more about the American presidency than the legacy of Ronald Reagan, in my opinion. You know, they're more of actual Americanism. So they're saying, well, Americanism now is Trump, and he's not a Democratic candidate like Barack Obama, what we can maybe critical of. So they do what's done in 1984.
Well, I do think it's interesting that the foundation was willing to get behind Donald Trump to try, and not exactly to get behind Donald Trump, who's very much all about tariffs, to try and protect that messaging against what Ronald Reagan, who their organization is about, actually stood for.
But as I say, they're for Americanism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like in George Orwell's 1984, I mean, you change the past. That was the other thing.
Yeah.
The past was changed, how you did the past documents, and you live with the contradictions. I think one thing is that you can maybe get more things United States now, because 2 + 2 = 5, so you may get some more items. You give them $2 + $2, you might get $5 at the bank now in the United States because of what's going on there. Big Brother Donald Trump.
All right.
Okay.
Well, that's our show for today. Thanks for tuning in to Speak Up this morning. I want to thank Landy Louie, president of the SFSS, and Pranay Ratan, who's VP Internal, for stopping by to tell us about their AGM. That's happening on Wednesday this week, the 29th at 5:30, up in the ballroom. But come by a little early and check out CGSF's pre-AGM karaoke to just get yourself in the vibe for an AGM. Thanks for tuning in today. Democracy Now! Is coming up in about 30 seconds. Lots more great programming here on CJSF. Stay tuned.
You heard Mike with Noise of Corporate right here on CJSF 90.1 FM and CJSF.ca. Hello, this is Arne Peltner, host of Radio Goethe. You're listening to Mike and his Noise of Corporate, celebrating the indie noises of the 90s on CJSF 90.1 FM and CJSF.ca.